KFYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stones.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that corner stop?
Ratchet, will you take the corner stop?
Transformers!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to TFYLP, Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, the Transformers podcast that airs each week on Saturday nights at 8 p.m. on YouTube. I am your host, Daron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Rick Alvarez.
Hi.
Hi. The ball of hair that you see down there in the lower left-hand quadrant is Jim Black. And
probably
he
still got his. And his
I was he again. Always forgets to unmute his damn mic.
As you may notice, I moved some things around. I'm still in the process of figuring out what I want to put where. So that's why everything looks different behind me than it normally does. So don't panic.
I was totally freaked out, Jim. Totally.
I know, right?
You know, I didn't know who you were because of your surroundings. I'm like, that's not Jim. Look at his background.
Yeah, I was totally speechless.
He didn't look like he was in a dark, dank back alley or anything. Also joining us from the Great White North is Jack Brunner.
Hey, everybody.
So we're going to talk to you a little bit tonight about, I know several episodes ago we talked about the last night and basically our thoughts on it, and lots of disappointment around the board, it seemed like. But tonight, I kind of want to focus on what is right with the live-action movies, what the Bay movies have done right. And, of course, you know, we're probably going to start out talking about the very obvious, which is it's drawn a lot more attention to the franchise and brought in a lot more fans and lots more money. But we're going to look a little bit past that and try to dig a little deeper and find positive things about the Bay movies. And I know a lot of people out there is like, well, is there any? I assure you there is. There's a lot to like about this film franchise. And lots more to dislike, in my opinion, but that's my opinion. We're going to talk about that tonight. You are a fan of our show, please help us out. Keep the lights on, keep the server fees paid, help us get upgrades and everything. We have a Patreon page at patreon.com/TFYLP. Whatever little bit you feel like donating to us each month is very helpful. Jim Black is holding something up, but it's not on screen.
There it is.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure where my camera's orientation was. I'm still getting used to this new setup.
Yeah, it's the same thing with you. You know, we're not sure where you're.
I know, right?
Yeah. So please, which one is that?
And you like the show? Yes. We like you. We hope you like us.
Yes, if you like us and like to see us continue. And as always, thank you with a heartfelt thanks to everybody that continues to donate to us each month. We are so thankful for you. I've said it before and I say it again. I think TFYLP has some of the greatest fans out there. As far as Transformer podcasts go, I mean, the outpouring of support and encouragement that you give us whenever you see us out and about at conventions is absolutely humbling. And I know at a recent convention, I saw several of you, and it was really, really nice to meet fans of the show out and about. Speaking of shows coming up, TFCon Canada, if it is not come and gone by the time you see and listen to this episode, is coming up very soon. You can see our sponsors, both of our sponsors actually, CapturePrey.com, great toys, great prices, great service, CapturePrey.com, where you can save even more with free domestic shipping on orders of $150 or more. Or if you're international, say Canada, you can get discounted shipping with orders of $150 more. Also, Mega Toy Fan, maximize your collection while minimizing your costs with MegaToyFan.com. You can find Mega Toy Fan on Facebook, as well as popular robot toy conventions year-round, such as TFCon Canada, and of course TFCon USA coming up in DC area later this year. I'd love to go. As it turns out, I will actually be off for TFCon weekend. However, I don't have a passport, and I didn't know I was going to have that time off, so I won't be there. I have sad. Mm-hmm. But any of you guys going or plan to go to either of those conventions?
Nope. I have a hell of a lot of other trips going on. I have...
Especially the one over Balls. tripping balls, bro. But,
I know, but I have a couple trips into Minnesota I have yet to make. I have one down in Milwaukee, and I just won't be able to go. So that's already some money sinkers, and unfortunately, I won't be able to go.
What about you, Rick?
I am not going. However, I do want to get that exclusive TFCon Yellow Trailbreaker.
Turegas?
Party. Yeah. Yes, that the looks amazing.
Rally Turegas.
And the Toy Head version. Putting that in the Toy Head version on it, man.
Well, it's so beautiful. And the fact, even if we do get an official Trailbreaker and hoist, it like could sit there on its own. I mean, it could be its own separate Autobot, you know, even though it's a Diaclone homage. It's just beautiful.
Yes, it is.
And we know Jim doesn't go anywhere, so no point in asking him.
I has to pour.
Well, so am I, but that doesn't mean anything.
I will be working in my basement that weekend. And that speaking of which, I painted. I still have some purple paint on me. I painted three walls purple today, Decepticon purple.
And so you even painted your toe purple, too.
And I broke my toe today, so that's all purple, too.
Ow.
So I have started a Facebook page for my vault, my basement. I am turning my basement into the Autobot Arc and Decepticon Nemesis. And that Facebook page is not live yet. I'm going to put all the pictures of my work in progress. That should be launching soon, hopefully in the next week or two.
Awesome. You know, if you had more purple on you and you had a T-Rex for a right arm, you could be going, yes.
No.
No.
But I, you know what? My last name is Alvarez, so would I say, see?
I'd be a little worried if his arm turned purple.
Yeah. That nobody likes a purple-headed monster. Oh wait, never mind. Jack, like, I don't know what you mean.
Yeah, Jack's a bit young and innocent.
Yeah.
So I missed the movie talk last time. I had a bunch of things to say about the movie, having been privileged enough to have worked on a few of them. I didn't work on The Last Night. However, a lot of our concepts for the for part four, Age of Extinction, ended up in The Last Night. I was wondering if we could touch base on some of those today, Daron.
Well, absolutely. Let's talk about those before we head into the movies one through five.
So this isn't a critique of the film, but this is just some background info. Long, long time ago, Aaron Archer and I at Hasbro put together the pitch for what would be the story elements for the next Transformers film, which at the time was going to be Age of Extinction. And we had this idea of this little motorcycle character. And this motorcycle character would be a robot that this kid would build. We just had him designated as a boy. He would be like the new Spike because we knew Shia wasn't coming back. That he built this Transformer, and at the end of the film story, Optimus Prime was going to grant him an Autobot symbol and was going to make him an official Autobot. So that concept didn't make the fourth film, but it did carry over into what became Squeaks. So that concept was there from the last film. So it was kind of nice to see that. Also, the idea of not so much Unicron or a giant ship emerging, but the idea of a giant Transformer coming out and the Autobots having to attack it was something that had been played around with towards the end of the story development of movie four.
But not so specifically Unicron.
No. It was at that point, it was called Galvatron, and that name was more of a placeholder. So the idea was that the humans were building a base, and they were using the Decepticons to safeguard that base to keep the Autobots distracted so that the Autobots wouldn't find out what the humans are doing. And at the end, the humans would find out that the base is a Transformer, and that would turn into a giant Transformer called Galvatron. So that didn't necessarily happen in this film, but
Rick, are we talking like a gigantic city sized purple and orange cannon?
So that didn't necessarily happen in this film.
Notice he glazes over the stupid question.
there are no stupid questions, just stupid people.
Yeah.
So, but I did see elements of that. To me, it was just indicative of that and that final battle sequence that was going to happen. And I don't know for certain. I'm not involved with the official production anymore. But there was that yellow crane in the background in that junkyard scene. I wonder. It was a bit. It just invoked the movie concept for Erector that we had. And I don't know if how many of our listeners actually got to see that movie concept that we presented in the documentary Righteously Huge at the Transformers Hall of Fame, I think in 2011. But there was an Erector movie concept. And that crane just kind of like, just made me wonder if that was it.
That looks a bit familiar.
Yeah, but the idea of Unicron had been discussed for the fifth film in a very, very different capacity. That it would have built up over a course of several films to Unicron. So that had all been stuff that we had discussed. But the main thing that carried over was Squeaks. He didn't have a name at the time. The concept art was very different, but that concept of that motorcycle and the girl or the kid was from our story pitch for part four. You notice that Squeaks didn't transform in the movie.
Yeah, I was a bit annoyed by that.
Do you notice that a lot of guys don't transform in the movie?
Well, I think we mentioned that in the last episode. Like you said, you didn't hear.
Yeah, I think we did.
But if there's any transforming going on, it usually happened like off screen, and you could hear like the choo 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 choo, you know, in the off screen. And the next thing you see them, they're like in a different mode, and it's like, oh come on, you know.
Yeah, but Optimus didn't even transform. I mean, he shows up in his truck mode once.
He really hadn't transformed in like two movies, has he? Did he transform at all in the last one?
In four, yeah. After he scanned his new truck mode, he transformed when he made up with the Autobots.
I think when he was the evasion mode.
No. He transformed in both modes. But he didn't transform in this movie at all.
In Age of Extinction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Right after they first introduced Drift and Hound and all them. That's right.
So it's a little weird. It's a movie called Transformers, but they don't transform.
Well, to touch on the critique that I gave it in the last episode, the biggest problem that I had with it was the fact that it takes elements. It's almost like somebody was given the Cliff Notes of Transformers that has no idea about anything in the Transformers universe from G1 all the way to RID 2.0. They have no idea. They're given the Cliff Notes, basically a gloss over of major plot points and characters throughout Transformers history, and they try to shoehorn them into a movie without any context whatsoever, and usually they wind up misquoting or misrepresenting said character. Case in point, Quintessa. In Transformers lore before, it was a planet. Now it's a singular character.
Well, Quintessa was one of the 13 primes. It was Quintus Prime was the name of it. And he was the prime of life. He was like the Johnny Appleseed, where he had his bag of sparks and he would go and bring life to different worlds. And
she referred to herself as the prime of life in the film.
Yeah. It's like somebody took the binder of revelation that we created and just ran it through Google Translate and then translated it back. Mm. And then they used that to make the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it just had, it's like it would, and I have to say that The Last Knight, as far as Transformers content, actually far outshone Age of Extinction, in my opinion. But it, like, missed the mark on accuracy. You know, to me, it's like, you know, if you're going to make a movie about Transformers, I don't care if you create new characters. But at least, if you're going to have relative characters, at least make them recognizable. At least Prime is recognizable. B is at least a yellow character. But everybody else in the whole film franchise bears little to no resemblance, either physically or characteristically, to anything that we're familiar with. And to me, that just kind of defeats the purpose of a Transformers film. You know, they even get fundamentals wrong. You know, it's like, how did they come to Earth? You know, things like that.
Well, in the tradition of all the Transformers films, this film completely negates the lore established by the previous Transformers film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been like that way since the very first sequel came out.
How many damn times has Barricade died?
Let's work back.
He's never died.
Yeah, he died in part 3.
Well, Soundwave did. Soundwave got his head blown off through his chest. But Barricade, I think, just lost his eyes.
I will have to say that I kind of did dig in this movie, in The Last Knight, the scene where Megatron was holding Starscream's head and basically talking to him like a scene out of Hamlet or something. Other. He's just like, old friend. <yeah. laughs> That was, I kind of did dig that. But... go ahead, Rick. I know you were getting ready to say something.
Well, you know what? Let's just move on, you know, working off that point. Why don't we start off with what we think the actual highlights, what we liked about part five was.
Yeah, these,
and then we'll just work our way through the entire saga.
Yeah, let's start with The Last Knight since it's the most recent and freshest on people's minds, and then we can go back to the very first one and then kind of work our way up. I don't want this particular episode to be a let's bash the Bay films, because that's been done to death. I know everybody has their strong opinions about it, but like you said, let's focus on what is done right about these films. Jack, let's start with you. What do you think was done right about The Last Knight?
I'm still honestly trying to think about it. Can you pass to somebody else for now and come back?
Okay, Jim.
Sorry, I was muted again. Hi. So The Last Knight, that was an awful lot to take in, I have to say. I could see several elements that they've pulled from various points throughout the mythos, just as they've done other times before. But wow, this was a lot to take in. You've got... You've got the different the knights. What were they called? The guardian knights.
I can't remember.
The ones that turn into the dragon. They all all combine.
I think they're just pretty much the knights.
Yeah, the ones that interacted with the drunk Stanley Tucci, or Sozzle, yeah, whatever he was.
The Dinobots were also knights too.
Yes, but they weren't the guardian knights. I think that was the qualifier that separated the two. But by that same token, Optimus himself would also be considered a knight, if we recall what he said when he first grabbed the sword in Age of Extinction. But I mean, that aspect of it, starting out in the medieval times, in the lore and the legend of King Arthur and Camelot, was really an interesting spin on that tale, and how they took out the Saxons, I believe.
Yeah.
And then I'm really intrigued by the aspect of B, and also Hot Rod, apparently, having been part of the Allied forces in World War II, taken on the Axis powers. And I'm kind of wondering if they might not delve into that a little bit more.
I believe it was actually written into this movie as a jumping point for the Bumblebee spinoff.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, because Sir Anthony Hopkins, his character... had made some kind of passing comment or remark about having worked alongside Bumblebee in his youth. And I'm wondering if that might not be it. And then, you know, his character in his younger years appears in the Bumblebee film. And then I've also heard, like, at some point it's supposed to take place in the 80s as well.
So, well, according to IMDb, the Bumblebee film is supposed to be set in the 80s. And Bumblebee is supposed to be a VW bug in it.
Yeah.
Well, we know we're going to see a cameo by a bug. I don't know if we know for sure that he will be a bug.
Well, wasn't he kind of like an older style bug in the flashback?
See, I didn't get too good of a look at it before he transformed, but I want to say it may have been.
He was an old World War II, Volkswagen.
That's what I was thinking.
Some vehicle that they had brought in for it, and I remember reading about it, but I forgot what vehicle it was.
Given the time and the setting, though, that would have taken place, so that would make sense for it to be at least a similar model or something along those lines, given the origins of the Volkswagen brand itself. But then moving on to the current times, one character I kind of liked, even though he was kind of a throwaway character, was Canopy. Didn't really have much in the way of speaking parts, just a few lines here and there, and I don't know, just the idea that you would have Transformers disguising themselves as rubble and debris. Is just, I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's along the lines of
Rock Lords a little bit.
Well, it's also along the lines of Metroplex. I mean, he's Metroplex and Triptychon, respectively, sure, become entire cities which are buildings, you know. So
Canopy forgot to read his instructions. That's the
But yeah.
But no, I was interested. It was interesting to see that and him palling around with the what was her name?
Isabella.
Yeah, Isabella. I was going to go with J-Lo.
Micro J-Lo.
Yes. And it was nice to see someone that wasn't an annoying human character for once. You know, she wasn't, you know, chasing around a Camaro or running from a Camaro or going, you know, flipping through textbooks at 90 miles an hour. I thought they could have done more with Isabella, but I see potential in maybe Transformers 7 for, was it 2019 that comes out?
Transformers 5?
I can absolutely see them bringing her back and developing her character more, especially if they don't bring back Marky Mark, because I'm thinking this might be.
I believe it was.
That would be a good transition to bring her in. And then you've got, I am horrible with names. I apologize.
You're just horrible.
With yeah. The not Megan Fox.
I don't remember.
Was he Huntington Wheatley?
No.
No, the one in this one.
Transformers 5.
Oh, the
historian.
Yes, her. The descendant, and I guess distant relative of Sam Witwicky. It's like there are more people to this Witwicky clan.
Yeah.
After all, and it makes me wonder if maybe distantly there might also, in some far off like corner of the state or something, might be, you know, Spike or Daniel or someone. But that's just pure fan speculation. But anyway, it was kind of neat to see that all come around full circle and connect back into Sam's character, albeit loosely, to further connect it with the first three films. Because I know Age of Extinction having been quite the jumping off point, but it kind of brought it back together. And I don't know, there's just so many things. Cogman?
Cogman,
no S. Got it. I absolutely love and adore this character. Oh my gosh!
Another non-transformer.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was referred to as being a headmaster. So that implies that he has a larger vehicle form that he would connect to.
I love the fact that
he's the headmaster, as in it's a British term for like a butler.
I understand. They said a headmaster, not the headmaster.
Well,
I'll have to go back and watch it, but I'm pretty sure they said a headmaster.
I liked his character, but I was extremely disappointed that they didn't show him transform in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think they're holding off on that till next film.
You know, he had some great comedic moments.
His tongue is a missile.
Yeah.
What's not to love about that? That was amazing.
Spidor.
right. And then just in the middle of this tense, serious situation, he's just freaking up on the balcony singing. Mm. That's great. I love that.
Yeah. So what about you, Rick?
Well, there's not a whole lot that I can say I liked about this film. But there is one thing, and I think a lot of people might give me some crap for it. But I really like the film version of Wheelie. I think that is a fun character. I like the way he talks. I like his size and how he fits in with the other robots.
He's basically an RC car, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. And I got to play with the actual Wheelie prop from the second film, which was really cool. The one thing I like to see in this film was Wheelie. He came back, although be it in a small part, a small non-transforming part. And that was kind of all I liked about part 5 was to see Wheelie.
I was to see him because I had thought that he didn't survive the crash at the end of 3.
Yeah, and I thought he was going to be
brains.
Yeah, It's all
I thought it was gonna be something like brains to where it'd be like using a cane to walk around and
right.
Yeah. I guess brain succumbed to his injuries. I don't know.
So let's go ahead.
So you know, if we're gonna move on from the last night,
well, I don't think Jack got to say his favorite of the movie.
So Rick, if you want to finish up whatever you're saying, or
no, go ahead.
Okay, pretty much. The main thing I liked about it kind of, you know, shifted focus away a little bit from the humans. I mean, pretty much the only thing I can really think of, obviously that was one of the huge problems from previous movies to where it's like it focused on really irrelevant parts on humans. And it was, so that's pretty much the only thing that I really didn't like about it. But liked, obviously Cogman, he was funny. Well, let's see. Yeah, the whole pretty much night. The word's escaping me now, but yeah, that whole backstory I liked. I think that's pretty much it.
You're struggling, man. You're struggling.
We're struggling with this one, yeah.
Yeah. Well, as far as to like about this film, there's some of the designs I really, really liked. I did like Hot Rod's car. He had a cool looking robot, even though he didn't look at anything like Hot Rod in any visual form.
Can I mention one thing about Hot Rod?
I think I know what he's going to talk about.
Alt-roll.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I saw a post and someone had zoomed in on the face, the head of Hot Rod, the
IDW
figure.
Hot Rod in it.
Yep. Yeah.
And I guess there's like a hidden Hot Rod face in the, I guess what you would call the lower face or the snout of Hot Rod.
Mm-hmm.
Like below the eyes.
Yeah, I saw that picture. But I did dig his design. I liked the character named after Michael Bay's dog, Nitro Zeus. He is very visually interesting, both in jet and robot form. Although in robot form, it just seemed like they just stole the CGI model for Shockwave and changed it up some. Very cheap looking at that. But nonetheless, he still came across a cool looking character. I really like this Megatron design. Although, if you watch the Age of Extinction, Megatron doesn't get killed off at the end. He basically retreats off. And
you mean Galvatron?
Yeah, that's Galvatron.
Yeah.
Mind you. And then, inexplicably, he shows up in this film with a totally new body design for no reason. I don't get that. That's another problem with the movie franchise. That goes, you know, it's been going on since the first movie. You know, it's like, you know, the movie, like Rick said earlier, the movie after each movie subsequently takes elements from the first movie and just totally disregards it. Or the movies that preceded it. And that was an example of it.
But let's stay on the positive, and I'll agree on you there that I did like Megatron's design. Megatron's the only character who, in all five films, has had a new robot mode and new vehicle mode. So that is the one thing that's continuous. No, Bumblebee's robot mode's been pretty much the same, and
car modes have been updated.
I mean, the car modes, you know, you're talking paint decals, but Megatron's a new, basically a new model each film.
Because it's went up model years with each film.
Yeah.
But that'd be the only difference. Fundamentally,
it's minutia. It's minutia. Yeah. So.
And then the transition from Prime, from the Peterbilt to the Western Star. But he's had the Western Star for now two films. And then he used the Peterbilt for
three,
and then the crappy Junker Prime for like
half.
Third to half, yeah. Let's go back to the very, very first live-action film, the one from 2007, the one that started it all. And in my opinion, the best out of the series so far.
As I call it, the good one.
Yeah.
And maybe that's because I didn't work on it, but it's the good one. And there is a moment in that film which has not been replicated and has been my number one complaint in all subsequent films. And that is the moment of revelation.
Oh, yes. The alley scene.
Yes. Where you have Sam and Michaela and the Autobots show up and they explain who they are and where they're from and what their mission is. That moment of discovery is one of my favorite scenes in film. Mm-hmm. And nothing like that has been seen in any other Transformers film.
As a Transformer fan, I found it very near tear inducing. That scene.
It was a perfect intro for Optimus Prime and for the other guys. I mean, you saw them briefly when they arrived to Earth. I guess at some point after, you know, meeting with Knights and stuff, they left Earth and then came back. That moment where Optimus Prime drives up and transforms and you hear Peter Cullen's voice and he says, "I am Optimus Prime." And that is...
It gets you in the feels, Joe.
It's the perfect moment, and I think that sums up my favorite moment for the whole saga.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that the piece of music that accompanied that, and they changed it up particularly for the alley scene, but it kind of led into it. Arrival to Earth by, yep. I believe it's Joel Jablonski. Steve Jablonski, my bad, is one of the most beautiful orchestral pieces, in my opinion. I could listen to that episode. I mean, not episode, but that song. And I have to admit, being a truck driver, I have put that CD in and listened to it as I was driving a semi down the road. I mean, it's just a very moving piece.
Yeah.
I agree, the arrival to Earth scene and the alley scene in the first movie was absolutely moving. And that very first moment, whenever Blackout is attacking the Soxhant airbase,
yep.
And whenever he's sitting there in copter mode, and then all of a sudden you hear that, you know, I remember seeing it the very first time and the crowd hearing the old style transforming sound right there at the beginning. There was an uproar of applause in the theater. And this is from a packed house now of people who probably not likely, you know, huge fans like we are, you know. So just to hear, I mean, it was that bit of familiarity that people absolutely, there was an uproar about. But sadly, it's not very present in every transformation scene when they even have one. They did have it a couple times in this film, but
there, you know, that's another really great scene. Before the first film came out, they did a press screening where they showed about 15, 20 minutes of the film in various stages of completion. And up until that point, a lot of people, including myself, were a little bit nervous as to what this film was going to be like and how were the Transformers going to look on screen. And this was the first scene they showed us. Michael Bay introduced it. The CGI work was not done yet. The soundtrack was not done. And you see the copter fly in. And then you see it land. And even though it was very rough animation when we first saw it, you see it transform. And even at that moment, with the unfinished animation. Everyone in that theater knew that this was going to be something insane. I mean, this was, that was the first thing I ever saw for the Transformers movie. We still, I think the only thing that had been revealed at that point was like maybe Starscream's robot mode, which leaked. And I was just completely blown away when I saw the whole blackout transformation sequence.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I remember seeing it in the theater. It was a midnight showing and there wasn't a empty seat in the house. It was in Lexington, Kentucky when I saw it, and it was a fairly large theater. And I think every screen that they had showing it that night was sold out. And just to hear the fan reaction, or the moviegoer reaction, I guess is more accurate, whenever that scene took place, it was, as a fan, I felt like it was a triumph. It really was. Jack, what's your thoughts on the first film?
Honestly, I find it to be pretty much the best film out of the series. My favorite bits were obviously the blackout one, hearing the transformation noise. It's kind of shaking my seat when I heard it. I was like, ooh, hope I hear it more. Then pretty
sadly
much
sadly disappointed.
Whole, yeah. Pretty much. Then, obviously, the whole introduction to the Autobots. But I think my absolute favorite scene of the movie is when Optimus finally reaches Mission City, pulls out, does that power slide, and then he transforms. And, oh, it's like he's just ready to kick some ass. And he kind of got his own ass kicked. So, but I still liked that scene. That was my favorite. And, yeah.
I have to say, though, with that scene, I can't help but wonder if Optimus took the wrong turn at Albuquerque or what, because it took him an awful lot of time to get to Mission City after everybody else had already arrived.
Yep. Dramatic entrance. Fashionably late.
The thing
late.
Is, that, on the highway battle, what happened to Bear Kid?
Precisely.
It's like, you just, okay, I'm just going to follow these guys and just...
You know, that was another thing, too, that I loved about the first film. Even though it was a full, I want to say, 45 minutes into the film before we actually hear the first Transformer spoken word, it's when Barricade has Sam Witwicky pinned on that car hood, and he's sitting there, and he's like, he's wanting to hurt this human, but he has information that he needs, and he's like... You could see him visibly holding himself back. He's like punching the ground, and he gets up in his face. Are you username ladies man 217? And he says it like you would expect a robot to say it. You know, he doesn't call him by his actual name. He's like, are you username ladies man 217?
Yep.
And it was funny yet you the action and. Everything going on just led you to it, and then you had that car chase afterwards between him and Bumblebee, and the music. I believe it was "Pretty Handsome Awkward" was the song that was playing.
Yeah,
it just worked. It worked, and that's the moment when the Michael Bay shaky cam and all that really actually added to the film rather than detracting from it. Anybody else have any thoughts on the first film?
You know, I know we're trying not to focus on the negative, but the way the robot characters are written, it's tough to sit and watch a whole film with just them acting the way they are if there weren't any humans in it. I hope that came across correctly. One of the things I liked about the first film, and I'm glad he came back for this one, was Simmons. I think he's the best human character in the entire saga. John Turturro does an amazing job.
Even though in this last film he was more or less a bit character,
yeah. Yes, yeah, but it was great. I mean, he served a function in every film that he's been in,
and we did not have to see his ass cheeks in this film.
Yeah, But
he wasn't in Age of Extinction, was he?
Nope. No, but unlike many other human characters, he actually serves a function.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was said by Michael Bay and several times since the inception of this film franchise that he intended for the Transformers film to be the very first one to be a film about a boy and his car.
Yep.
And to me, at that that is kind of not what Transformers is about. Why make a Transformers film if you're not going to make it about the story of the Transformers? Yeah, I understand that you have to have a plot point that relates to that people, the general audience, can relate to. But if people can get behind a bunch of people in leotards flying around and fighting each other like they do in Avengers, then you can get people behind giant alien robots that turn into cars and trucks and airplanes and guns and whatnot fighting each other. You don't need that element of boy in his car. Yes, it was. It came across okay in the first film. It worked. But I think going into Revenge of the Fallen, they kind of, it's like they had something good started. They had a good basis started with the first film, and then they jumped the shark with the second.
There was the writer's strike too.
Yeah, that is a given, and we have to kind of remember that whenever we're talking about Revenge of the Fallen. So let's move on to that. Rick, you want to start with Revenge of the Fallen?
Oh, man. What did I like about Revenge of the Fallen? Well, you know, Wheelie. That's my favorite character in the whole movie verse. Followed, I guess, by Insane Optimus Prime. Let's see. Man, Revenge of the Fallen, this is another tough one.
Insane Optimus Prime. Give me your face type.
Yeah, give me your face. We'll kill them all.
You know. That right there enrages me. I'm like, that is not Optimus Prime in any way, shape, or form. That's not somebody that is out to protect the right of all sentient beings. He's a murderous killer.
Yes.
You know?
Give me your face. I need it for my collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the piece I'm missing for this figure.
man, Wheelie.
Skids and Mudflap.
You know, I didn't like the character of Jetfire, but I liked the way he was introduced. And I liked the whole concept that he replaced a plane at some point and that he ended up in a museum. I don't like the interpretation of that character, but I liked the whole concept of that.
And he farted out a parachute in that movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah.
Makes you wonder where they stored it.
That happened.
Of course, in the first film, we also had Bumblebee pulling his oil plug and pissing on a character.
Yeah, that happened too.
You know, I've got to wonder what it's like sitting in a theater watching the execs at Hasbro see this film.
Represent a toy. I've done that. I've sat next to the execs at Hasbro while we watched the Transformers films, and they all walk out of it saying it's great. It's great. But they know in the back of their head, they won't tell us, but they know.
They made a mistake.
They know. Man, there was a lot of swearing in that movie. Or,
well,
man,
the last night took that to a
This is on someone.
Yeah,
there's a lot of swearing in that movie. I want to take my my 5-year-old daughter to see it, but I think I'm going to have to wait until the Bumblebee movie.
But when you have Transformers saying shit and fuck, you know, repeatedly, I have a problem with that. Yeah, it said shit is said in the '86 movie, but that was not thrown in there by Flint Dilly or anybody like that. It was thrown in there by a marketing person, you know. So that they could give that movie specifically a PG rating. But these films, I'm sorry, you know, this podcast, and I mentioned it on the episode where we talked about the last night, this podcast here is aimed at adult collectors. You know, I'm sure that there are maybe children that watch this podcast or listen to this podcast, but I don't see a whole lot of kids watching a bunch of grown men sit around and talk about toys all that often. So I don't really worry so much about the cursing in this podcast. But whenever you have a major feature film that is based on a children's franchise, that type of language and those type of actions, yeah, fart jokes maybe, because kids eat that up. But I just don't think it has a place in the
Parent, I just can't bring myself to. It's not so much the violence in this film, because it's robot on robot violence. I mean, there's a few instances where people die, and Sir Anthony Hopkins, his character, dies. But I think kids can be a little bit desensitized to that stuff. It's really the language that just, like, I don't want to put my 5-year-old girl through that yet.
It was almost on par. The last night was almost on par in language. Not in innuendo, but in language, it was almost on par with Deadpool, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It was the same difference. You know, Deadpool is not meant for kids, and they clearly told people this. You know, yes, it's based on a comic franchise, but the comic itself is not aimed at kids.
And they still received thousands of complaints from parents.
Yeah. But we're not focusing on the negative. It is so hard to not do this. But
I've got some positives.
Well, let's talk about the Revenge of the Fallen. Let's get back on topic here.
Yes, positives about Revenge of the Fallen.
Megan Fox in slow motion.
Yeah.
Boing boing.
Okay.
Her toe thumbs. Yeah.
I'm focusing on Transformers. turn us down.
We topic. Are.
Okay, Alice.
That was Dark of the Moon.
That was a little outside the box, but that was honestly kind of cool.
Wasn't that Dark of the Moon as well?
No, that was
Revenge of the Fallen.
Thank you. That okay. Two. One. The concept of that was just cool. I don't care how you slice it. That was just a neat thing to do. It was hilarious when, you know, she's got like the big metallic tongue, and the human tongue is still at the end of it flapping around.
Yep.
I laughed at that. But aside from their personalities, which I don't really much care for their personalities, I loved the designs of Skids and Mudflap. And I wish they would have had the third member of that team in with them and went ahead and made them a combiner too.
No, it was never them. It was the RCs.
Well, from what I understood, there was supposed to be a smart car in there too. That was why Skids and Mudflap had the large arms, respectively.
No, they were two halves of a whole.
Yeah, it was the RCs that were the combiners.
If you notice, the Skids and Mudflap character, each one of them had a large side of a face, and the other one and a small side of the face, and both of them, if I'm not mistaken, were opposite. You know,
right? And then the pinhead. The smart car had like a small pinhead.
Where did you get this information?
Jim, I worked on it. I don't remember that. Boards.
I mean, unless it was a well done Photoshop.
I think you need to look that up.
Yeah, prove that to me.
I think I may. I'll research that while you guys are going. But
well,
ultimately though, I adored Skids Mudflap. The ice cream truck thing, I thought that was my favorite part about
that. That was cute.
Over the Chevy Trax and the Chevy Beat. I preferred the ice cream truck more.
Yeah.
I'm gonna research that smart car thing right quick. I want to find out so our viewers and listeners can also know.
When you find it, if you find it, post it in the
absolutely
in the Facebook group. Jack.
Oh boy.
ROTF.
My favorite parts of it were Optimus arriving in Shanghai, you know, falling from the plane or the cargo jet. Obviously, you got Stratosphere back there. And I loved how he came with the little mini Optimus Prime, and you can recreate that scene. And one of my favorites. Then I think this is pretty much the best fight scene in the entire series. But the forest battle with Optimus versus Starscream, Grindor, and Megatron, and Optimus is getting his butt kicked, and he's like, okay, bring it on. Kills Grindor with the hooks to the face, lops Starscream's... rips Starscream's arm off, and he ultimately gets by Megatron. Still love that scene to death. Still pretty much the best fight scene, obviously. Simmons, still funny, despite, you know, we saw ass cheeks in this movie. That was, as much as I love Simmons, that was the only thing I really found cringy of the character. So, it's pretty much all I could think of. Pretty much everything else was...
You know, I liked the Constructicons in this movie, except I didn't like the overall design of Devastator. As him being like a big, well, I didn't like the wrecking balls, especially since none of those particular construction vehicles actually had wrecking balls. So where did they come from?
Yeah.
They hadn't descended yet.
You know, but that notwithstanding, I liked the combination sequence whenever they were down in the quarry. You know, it was like, wait a minute, there's something not right here. And then they start to merge. And that was just, I loved that scene, but I didn't like the design of Devastator. It just,
Now that you say the whole combination scene, there is one Easter egg that I really, really like, and that was pretty much my favorite of the entire series. But as the Devastator sucking up everything into his mouth and shooting out the back, as the humans were holding on, you know, for dear life, and
that didn't sound right.
Shut up. But anyways, I forgot which one of the twins was holding onto the bar, but there was that newspaper that flapped onto the pipe, and I liked how it said it had Shockwave pretty much setting him up for Dark of the Moon. Still my favorite.
It was the G1 box art, wasn't it?
No, it was a comic art, I believe, from Dreamwave.
Okay.
It was that, or I think the 07 movie game Shockwave, I think it was.
No.
I think it was that or the comic, like you said.
Yeah, it was definitely based off the G1. I think it might have been a Pat Lee piece. But it was like a newspaper clipping, and I think the paper said a giant alien robot invades or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Found it.
All right, share it in the group.
Okay.
And another thing that I lament about the Revenge of the Fallen is that even though we got most, or the Constructicons, and we did get a Devastator, and we got the little Legends Devastator, we didn't get a proper, fully transformable Devastator toy. You know, I wasn't crazy about the design, but it was a Bayverse combiner that we should have got, but we never did. You know, we got the toys, but they just didn't put a combining gimmick in it. Why even bother? I mean,
technically the little Legends class, but that still wasn't, the whole big thing.
What I'm saying, though, is like I wanted robot form, vehicle form, combined form. And it's like the little Legends one did that. But it was so tiny.
This compared to Leader Prime, which was, you know, like that.
And then you had that Behemoth, which had cool vehicles and a cool combined mode, but no individual robots. Dark of the Moon. Now, I was actually at the BotCon in Pasadena whenever Michael Bay was there and showed us the first 15 minutes of the film. I was mildly excited after that. But after the film, I was kind of like disappointed. But there were points about it I did enjoy. Jack, you're hopping at the bell here.
I actually just found what that Shockwave was. It says here that it was a Palisade statue of G1 Shockwave.
Uh-huh. That makes sense.
A bit of trivia there.
Yeah.
I'll post it into the group.
So, Rick, Dark of the Moon.
Dark of the Moon. Some trivia. They want to call it Dark Side of the Moon. And Hasbro fought against that. And I think Dark Side of the Moon couldn't be registered in all the territories. Obviously because of the album. So they came back with Dark of the Moon. And we never quite got an explanation as to why it was called that.
Well, I think it's because of the whenever they went to the moon to explore the crashed Autobot shuttle up there when they found Sentinel Prime, they went dark. So, and they explained it as, okay, the astronauts are on the dark of the dark side of the moon.
Yep. Right.
And I think that's where the moon movie actually gets its title from.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that Optimus had a really cool jetpack in it. I love that scene where Optimus is flying down, he's losing pieces of the jetpack, and he's cutting guys in half down the streets of Chicago, and he just, like, nails the guy right in the stomach with that sword. That was a great scene. I love the idea of the Wreckers, and I remember being so excited that the Wreckers were going to be a part of the film. The execution of the voices just didn't make sense to me. If they're NASCARs, why are they Australian? Mm. But I love the idea of the Wreckers. Unfortunately, one of my favorite characters from the film didn't make it into the final film, which was the Steeljaw, which was the Leadfoot's engine popped out, and it was this cool little bulldog type of robot. And a toy version actually came with the Human Alliance, but we had all the concept art for that character, and I just remember thinking that was going to be the coolest thing. So the dog Steeljaw, had sunglasses that flipped down, and they were like the visors, like the visor that Leadfoot has. It kind of looked like that. Like he would go woof, and then the visor would flip down, and he'd have sunglasses.
Why did they not do that? Come on!
He didn't make the film. He didn't make the film. So, I was really hoping Steeljaw would be in it, but maybe one day that concept will show up again.
I did like the fact that Prime had a trailer in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't like the fact that nobody said, hey, where'd the trailer go? I was waiting for that line, someone to say, hey, where'd the trailer go? Or where'd the trailer come from?
I would have liked to have seen, this black hole or something other open up behind him and the trailer disappear into it.
He transforms.
It opens up again. That would have been so cool. I like that. I kind of dug Shockwave in the film, even though he didn't turn into a big laser gun. I kind of dug that, his mode. At least he had the monocle eye, and the laser arm. He was a really great design. Laserbeak was okay. I didn't get the fact that he turned into a little pink bumblebee, though. That kind of lost me whenever he did that. I don't know.
That was the one thing I didn't really care for, was Laserbeak's entire appearance in the film.
Yeah, I didn't like the head design on that. That was unfortunate. We let that happen, too. The twins had been written into the film, and we all know that they were, filmed, the vehicles, because the vehicles were on set. They were digitally removed. Mm-hmm. They had a scene where they died, and I think that scene actually made it into the novelization.
Yes,
when Ironhide gets killed, the twins actually put up a fight against Sentinel Prime. And then I think he steps on one of their heads.
Trying to remember how it went. I think I want to say it was Skids went first. He started, like, after Ironhide got shot, Skids went up. He was, like, trying to tell Sentinel off, and all of a sudden he got killed. Mudflap just lost it and, like, screamed and started attacking Sentinel, and I think that's how he went. And he was just,
yeah,
bam, and I think that's what it was.
And then, you know, real quick about the trailer, we had designed a really cool trailer. We knew that, and this just, for whatever reason, Hasbro wasn't making a trailer that transformed into the jetpack. They made a trailer that was like body armor. But before the body armor trailer, there was another trailer that was prototyped where it would open up and there was this giant cannon in it. And Optimus Prime would sit in the cannon, and the cannon would spin around. Like there'd be a battery in it, and the cannon would spin around, and it could fire. It was a giant cannon. But that, you know, that didn't cost out. So they ended up taking the cab Optimus and then just making the trailer into that horrible exo armor suit thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I did dig Sentinel Prime's design, but I didn't like his character. I like the fact that they got Leonard Nimoy to voice him. And the Ironhide death scene, it actually had meaning. It wasn't just the typically Bay movie Transformers meaningless death.
In the first one, and
Rick will appreciate this. To me, Sentinel Prime, whenever he shot Ironhide with the Cosmic Rust cannon,
that was me.
Yeah, whenever he shot Sentinel Prime with the Cosmic Rust cannon, it was almost as if it came across as a wrestling heel turn. You know, I mean, all up until this time, we had doubts about him, and then it's like it was the chair shot to the back, you know, scene. I absolutely loved that.
It was the heel kick through the barbershop window.
Yeah.
It was Hulk Hogan joining the NWO. You could just imagine JR in the background going, "Oh, my God."
So. You know, one of my favorite things about Dark of the Moon is Sentinel Prime's vehicle mode, because I actually recommended that, and they actually took it and they implemented it. So it was the opening weekend of Revenge of the Fallen, and everyone had gone to the premiere in California except for me. I flew down to Washington, D.C. to set up the Smithsonian exhibit that's right next to the Jetfire plane in the Air and Space Museum. So I got to run around in the museum after hours setting up all the props from Revenge of the Fallen. And on my way home, I was at Dulles Airport, and they had this fire truck there. And I'd never seen a fire truck like this before. I'm like, this thing is huge. I mean, the size of this is just, it's insane. So I took a picture of it. I'm like, no, I need to take a whole series of pictures of this. So I actually sent the pictures from my phone, and we made a presentation board saying this needs to be Sentinel Prime's alt mode for, you know, take this for consideration. And then sure enough, it came back. And that was it. And the robot mode that we used to explain the character, and it was just to explain the character, wasn't to design. We took G1 Grapples box art. And then we modified it and put all these other parts on it. We photoshopped all these things onto it, and that became the robot presentation for Sentinel.
Interesting.
Now is that something that survived your office, that, or is that lost to the ages?
That's lost to the ages.
Okay.
Yeah, speaking of things lost to the ages, I just found out this weekend the original Beast Wars Rampage box art, the Voyage Rampage, that no longer exists. That was also lost. That was in my friend's private collection, and it got accidentally thrown out in the trash in Japan.
Ooh. Oh,
Man, that's another one that's gone.
That is sad. Now, we've only got a few minutes here left. Let's quick look at Age of Extinction.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. The Dinobots. Now, even though they didn't appear to the 11th hour in the film, really, I did like them. I love them. I love the Dinobots in there. I actually dig the designs. You know, I mean, they're not G1, but they don't have to be. They were pretty badass. I liked them. If I had to say there was any one thing in the movie that I liked in of Age of Extinction, I would have to say it would be the Dinobots. What about you guys?
Age of Extinction was one of those things where, you know, it hit home because I put a lot of work into that film, and I was no longer at Hasbro when it opened. So I got to see how it changed from the script that I saw to what became the film. And I remember thinking when the Autobots were getting onto Lockdown Ship to rescue Optimus Prime, I'm like, wow, this was a pretty good movie. This was all right. And then I realized...
it's only halfway through.
The Dinobots haven't shown up yet. I got at least another hour of this shit. And sure enough, there was another hour of the movie. And I'm like, ah, if they just ended it there, it would have been great.
Yeah.
But I loved the fact that there was a villain that wasn't... the key villain wasn't Megatron. Lockdown. I really liked that.
Yeah. Lockdown was a cool character. Lockdown was
Cool.
And that's one of the things that I like about... that film and, you know, like The Last Knight, the fact that we have a Gaia Unicron in The Last Knight, basically. Unicron is actually, it was ripped right out of the Prime trilogy, not the Prime trilogy, but the Prime series, with Unicron actually being inside the Earth. You know, the character of Lockdown, which was animated, I believe.
Yep.
When he was introduced. I like the fact that they introduced him into this series. That was pretty cool.
And he had a
badass car mode. Too bad the toy was a little bit lacking, but
yeah.
The art that we presented was very Mad Max inspired. So we did present the TF animated version of Lockdown. And even though I didn't control casting all, I got to speak to Lance Henriksen. And I had told him, like, listen, we're going to put Lockdown in the movie. And he said, oh, that would be great. I'd love to be able to take that character one more time and be able to voice it. And he would have been down for it. He would have been down for it. And I don't think he could legally say that we had had that conversation with Lance Henriksen to the studio. Contractually, I don't think we could ever tell them that. But I spoke to Lance. And he was definitely down for it. And I wish he had been the voice of Lockdown in that film.
Yeah. What about you, Jack? What do you think you like about Age of Extinction?
Well, I kind of like, pretty much Optimus being in his more G1 truck mode. You know, I kind of like that. It was cool. God, what else? Pretty much... the Autobots for United, I kind of like that scene, how Optimus went from the flat-nosed truck to the whole changing into the Western Star. I kind of like that one, that part. Trying to think of else that's good. I actually just watched it the other week, so it's still pretty much fresh in my mind. I'm just trying to remember. But, seeing Ratchet hunted down and killed kind of, I don't know why, but it kind of felt the same as Ironhide, to where it actually had meaning this time. It's just seeing his head getting melted down. It was just, we won't see him again. And he was such a great character. I actually like
another example of a meaningless death to me in the Transformer, in this series of films.
Yeah.
Jim, what about you?
Well, I have to say, kind of like Rick was saying, you know, I really like Lockdown. I mean, you have a Transformer who hates you so much, he turns his entire face into a gun just in an attempt to kill you. I mean, that's hate.
Yeah.
That's the stare of death.
he didn't care in the film. If you really notice his character, he didn't give a damn if you were Autobot or Decepticon. If you were in his crosshairs, you were in his crosshairs.
Right.
As long as he's getting paid, he's good.
Admittedly, though, I have to say, though, as far as Lockdown's design, I was a bit disappointed they didn't at least call back in some way to the design that they had for, what was that, Hunt for the Decepticons, or when there was the Lockdown that was redone in.
Yeah, I think it was like 2010, so that sounds about
right. Yeah, that mold. Maybe not the head necessarily, but the overall design, you know, how tall and imposing it was.
Yeah.
And you still had the arm weapon and all that. I mean,
it's just a good
toy. I don't know. I just really liked that design.
It's a good toy.
Granted, it wasn't a realistic vehicle, but, you know, all the same.
Well, neither was Movie 1 Megatron or...
Yes, that's true. This is true.
Yeah. Movie 1 Megatron, the box of knives.
I have to say, though, what was the corporation that was melting
KSI.
Everybody
down?
KSI. I always get the acronyms.
Kinetic Solutions Incorporated?
Yeah, that one.
And they threw a freaking My Little Pony in there, too.
Yeah.
If they had apparently Megatron's psyche on file and everything, had the minds of any of the other Transformers that they had melted down also on file, could there somehow be some kind of archive?
Those are questions nobody has the answers to.
Right, but that's just one thing I was left wondering, and they didn't really go into that too far. Yeah. We saw when Ratchet was killed, his spark wasn't extinguished, it was just ripped out.
Yeah.
But like Jetfire, he crushed his. You know, but we didn't see that with Ratchet. So that's just one thing that I was left wondering after watching that film. But overall, I enjoyed Kelsey Grammer's character, Harold Attinger. I thought that was kind of neat that, you know, a human would just walk up to a Transformer and not you know, think, give two thoughts about it. He would just walk up to you and attempt to take you on, you know, just by himself. I mean, that's something.
So, overall, out of all the five of the films, what is the best moment? Well, I think we mutually agreed on the that in the first film, the alley scene was the best moment. What's the overall best film in your opinion?
First one.
Yeah.
Yeah, first would pretty much, because to me it felt like last night was honestly a lot better than Dark of the Moon to me. So I kind of, obviously the first 07 movie was number one. Last night was two. And obviously Dead Last was Revenge of the Fallen. And, you know, Dark of the Moon was third. And yeah, it's 07 I absolutely loved. Yeah, it's pretty much the best movie of the
Got
franchise.
Me wanting to go back and watch it again. Incidentally, the 07 movie, the 07 movie had the teardrop shaped toys as like the premiere edition.
Yes.
The Starscream is GPS, nothing but GPS. I know this from handling it last night. It was like holding it with like kid gloves.
Transformers, the flaming turd, and you broke it?
No, we didn't break it. We didn't break it.
Oh, yeah.
But it is made entirely of swirly gold plastic.
The protoform one?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, you know, we've tried and we've struggled to come up with some of the best points and the good things that the live action movies have done right. I know we could go on a little bit longer about this, but I'd love to hear what you fans have to say. You can tweet us at TFYLP or post in our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/TFYLP. We'd love to hear from you. Tell us what your favorite moments of the Transformers live action movie franchise is. I mean, let's try not to focus on the negative. We know that there's lots and lots of negatives about this film series, but there is a lot of great in this film series too. I mean, great moments. There's some great comedy. There's some great action scenes, and some great designs. There is some great. Let's try to find a little silver lining to this cloud. Let us know what you think, fans. You guys have any closing thoughts?
Not that I can think of.
Let's hope that a new director, new writing team can reinvigorate the Transformers movie franchise.
I think at this point, a reboot would absolutely do the franchise wonders.
See, I don't want to see the same characters again. I'm ready to move on.
I want a total reboot. Total reboot.
So I'm ready to move past Optimus Prime and Bumblebee, and I'm ready to see Cosmos. So
yeah. You can always bring in Bryan Singer.
Yeah. All right, guys. I want to remind people, if you are listening and you are a fan of professional wrestling, we now have a sister podcast that we are now producing. We got one episode under the belt. Hopefully coming up soon, maybe by the time you watch or listen to this, a second episode will be published. It's the FOWE, F-O-W-E, Fans of Wrestling Everywhere podcast. If you love professional wrestling, check out the FOWE podcast now on iTunes. And I just got the notification during the recording of this show that it is now on the Google Play Store. And it should be on Stitcher very soon. And also, there is a video version of it on YouTube on the FOWE Wrestling Podcast channel. It is not anything to do with Transformers, so if you're not a wrestling fan, then you don't need to check it out. But if you are a pro wrestling fan, whether it's WWE, Ring of Honor, New Japan, we talk about all that stuff and a lot more. Hopefully down the road we're going to get some guests. We're going to try to pull some strings and get some guests down the road. So check it out. And I want to remind everybody that if you love TFYLP and what we do on this show, if you love Transformers and love what we do here, help us out on Patreon at patreon.com/TFYLP. Guys, I want to thank you all for joining me tonight and helping us to get this podcast under wraps here. We will see you next time on TFYLP. Oh, Rick, you got something?
No, I broke my toe, so I was moving it, and I just sharp pain went through me.
Don't move your toe.
I'm about to head out to jiu-jitsu right now.
With a broken toe.
I wouldn't recommend
Yeah, not recommended. 9 out of 10 doctors do not recommend going to jiu-jitsu with a broken toe. All right, guys. We will see you next time on TFYLP. Good night, everybody.
Have a good night.
This has been Transformers for your listening pleasure, a presentation of tftalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@tfylp.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.